All right. So, you know, recently a Niner on Channel 9, Sabat is his name.
Sabat.
That's his Niner name. Kind of said, hey, I really want to learn about Madison, Gemini, Kilimanjaro in general. So, hey, Sabat, here you go. Today we're going to talk about Madison specifically with...
Christian Kleinerman.
Excellent.
The product unit manager of the data warehousing product unit down in Aliso Viejo, California, Orange County.
Excellent, man. So, you know, without further ado, what is Madison?
Madison is the upcoming SQL Server release for large-scale data warehouses. So it will be a new SKU of SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
It will be something like, we don't know, have the final name.
That's
something
fine.
Like SQL Server 2008, something, data warehouse, something. but basically, it's how do we take the appliance model and take a pre-configured hardware and software solution to enable customers to build very large data warehouses way, way beyond what has been done with SQL Server to date.
Interesting. So, I mean, just to, you know, at least get us up to speed a little bit, I mean, how different is it than what SQL Server can already do today if you just deploy it on, you know, 1,000 servers? Can you talk a little bit about what this really means?
Yeah, so SQL Server today scales on a single node to very large databases, very large data warehouses, very large number of users, concurrent users. So on a single node is really good. If you want to install on multiple nodes, today is sort of like an exercise left to the user to make a large number of SQL servers work as a single node or a single machine. So scale-out technology, MPP, massively parallel processing technology, mm-hmm. is about how do you get a set of resources, set of machines, make them work as if they're one database. So Madison is exactly that. There will be a series of SQL Server nodes, or series of nodes, all of them are running SQL Server, but from the user's perspective, it just looks like one big database engine that it is really, really fast for answering data warehousing queries.
That's very, very interesting. Now, that sounds to me that, I mean, you have obviously some sort of scheduler involved here, right? I mean, you're going to have to, if you're going to have multiple instances, really just be one instance. Something's going to be scheduling and partitioning workloads.
Sort of like that. We have something called the control node.
Nice.
Can I use the word?
Will you please use the word? That was my way to get you on the board, man.
Yeah, so basically, at the high level, there's something called the control node.
Okay.
And this is what goes talks to a series of compute nodes. Compute
mm-hmm.
one, compute two, all the way to compute n.
Okay.
I don't know if my writing is clear. So control node, compute one, compute two, compute n.
Yes.
So user queries come here. We'll have like standard connectivity, ODBC, ODDB, ADO.NET, JDBC. Connect here, it looks like a single database server. You can send queries there, and this control node farms out the query to the different compute nodes. All of them are running SQL Server.
Of course.
Each one does its own part of the work, sends a result, and the result goes back to the connecting application.
Excellent. I mean, in some sense, it's pretty much what, you know, web servers do today. When you have the round robin server, takes the request, throws it off to whatever one's available. And so you're going to have to know which one of those computes are actually available for compute.
Yes, and well, it's similar and not. It's similar in the sense that there is a farm.
Yes.
And a set of nodes. But in a IIS farm,
mm-hmm.
all web servers are the same. And what the round robin or the load balancer is doing is sending requests to any one of them.
Exactly.
Okay. While for any single query,
yeah.
all the backend compute nodes are working in unison to give a single answer to the user.
Aha.
So, for example, the database, this partition, there are small little chunks, parts of the database, one little slice on each of the nodes. And when a query comes into the control node,
yep.
then all the different slices get their part of the query. Query sent to each SQL Server and says, okay, give me all the partial results. All of them come down here.
Yes.
And then the results go back. So there's a lot of data movement that is going on between the nodes.
Absolutely.
To assemble the final result and send it back to the application.
Great. So, I mean, what you're talking about is data parallel processing, right?
Yes.
Sort of like we just on Channel 9 spent, like, very deep dives into a really incredibly interesting technology called Dryad, which, of course, you're familiar
with. I've heard about Dryad.
Which, of course, takes some sort of computation package, builds this, you know, immense vertex, and then it farms out the computation to however many servers are available to do it. And like you're saying, everything's working.
Correct.
It's not just the one that happens to be there. So now I get it, right? Madison is data parallel processing for SQL Server.
Yes, especially for SQL Server for data warehousing queries.
Excellent. Give me an example of what a data warehousing query is versus just a normal query. I'm not a data guy. So.
Yes. So data warehousing in general goes back to looking at historic data and doing aggregation or understanding trends or relations between large volumes of data. So typically, there are multiple ways to model data warehousing queries, but typically there is one big long fact table. And this is every single operation that has happened in the business. And typically, again, it's joined to one or more dimension tables. Dimension one, dimension two, and so on and so forth. So a canonical example, I'm going to track all the sales for my company. So every single sale that I register would be one row in the fact table.
Okay.
And then about each sale, there are multiple dimensions of information. Say, what is the customer, or what is the location of the sale, or who was the sales associate? And the typical data warehousing query is, give me the sum of all the sales that have happened in this location, in this geography, by this salesperson.
Okay.
So a lot of the queries that people build, for example, using Excel pivot tables,
mm-hmm.
that's very typical data warehousing query where there's a large data set, and you want to just to group by different criteria, group by geography, group by salesperson, group by product category,
mm-hmm.
and find out the sales total or the number of people that attended, minimums, maximums, standard deviation. That is typical data warehousing. So it is very large volumes of data, and you want to aggregate large number of rows to answer smaller questions.
Outstanding. And of course, you know, parallel processing is the way to go.
Yes. So basically, if you have 100 terabytes of data, instead of having a pure single compute node just chugging through all the data, it would be much, much better to do a divide and conquer approach. Mm-hmm. You divided the data, 100 terabytes, into large number of nodes. Each one does its own part of the query and returns the result.
Outstanding, man. And this is, I mean, this is why, I mean, data is perfect for parallelization.
Yes,
I
mean, absolutely.
It's just a wonderful you know, data, a structure.
Absolutely.
To just compute the hell out of on multiple processors.
Yes, in the SQL division, we have this vision around we want to be able to manage data for all types of data, birth to archival, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big realizations is digitally born data. There's more and more data being created every single day. It's no longer predicated on people typing or being able to scan. No, it's lots of devices, GPS, phones, etc.
Mm-hmm.
They're just generating data. A lot of that is ending up in some database, and we need to be able to analyze that.
Absolutely.
That is where Madison is going to help analyze and ask insightful questions mm-hmm. on very large data sets.
That's really, really interesting. So you're listening to this, Sabat? Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to bring the Niners into conversations once
yeah.
in a while. And in fact, I was able to was not able to connect to the network, but I'm pretty sure he had specific questions for this. But unfortunately, I don't know if we can get wireless in here.
Well, we can do a follow-up. That is one option.
Yeah.
At some point, we can try to do a demo for Channel 9.
That would be great.
It's not that easy because yeah. there's a ton of gear when we talk about all these nodes.
Yeah.
In reality, we have high availability and redundancy for this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only some compute nodes, but there's a set of spare nodes, there's storage. So, but maybe one day we'll do the video for the channel liners.
Yeah.
Go show two or three rack appliance.
Yeah.
We're in the process of getting one of those Madison appliance here in Building 35.
Great.
We can go look at it and maybe see how Madison can answer queries easily on 100 terabytes just like that.
Just like that. So let's now, okay, focus a little bit on sort of, you know, how this has been constructed. So when you say just like that, I mean, that just like that's going to be dependent on the number of compute nodes, correct?
Correct.
I mean, obviously.
Correct.
And the complexity of what if the question that you're asking is really complex and such that the actual query over the data is, again, I mean, I don't know a better word than just complex. It has to touch a lot of different tables. I mean, your data could be composed. So in other words, you flatten the data out first and then partition out the computation.
Yeah, so inside this control node, there's a distributed query optimizer.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to what happens within a single SQL Server node, right?
Okay.
Today, plain vanilla, SQL Server 2008, you send a query. And that query can be select star from table where A equals 1, or it can be deep nested subqueries, 10-way joins, having clauses, order by, cross apply. You can do 10, 15 page queries. And in the same way that you send that to SQL Server, and the optimizer needs to go decompose that thing, look at what is the relational operator, simplify it, make it faster, etc. There's a similar distributed query optimizer inside the control node. It takes the large query. It may be a join with the fact table, lots of the dimension tables, and say, okay, this is complicated. Different tables may be joined on different columns. What is the best strategy for executing this? And breaks apart, creates a sequence of steps. And those are the ones, the individual steps are the ones that are sent to the compute nodes. Mm. So you can see that the control node goes and sends queries to all the compute nodes. Each one does a part. And for that, we're leveraging, again, the complexity or the capability of the SQL Server optimizer. Some partial results are sent back to the compute node. For all this, we're moving data back and forth. And there will be additional steps. So if you have a subquery, you can go evaluate the first subquery, get the results, join it to some other results.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way that the SQL optimizer does the decomposition of the problem into multiple steps, same thing is happening in St. Madison. That takes a big query, breaks it into smaller pieces, and leverages the power of all the compute nodes.
Absolutely.
So this is database theory, distributed query processing.
Sure.
And we have like great people in the team.
Yes, you do.
Ensuring that it's great.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we've had some of those people on Channel 9.
Yes.
Many times. And so when you think about the way that single node hardware is evolving, I mean, it's not too far-fetched to imagine in the not very far distant future that servers will have anywhere from 200 to, say, 1,000 cores.
Yes.
Right? The hardware guys are not going to stop putting cores up on it.
Absolutely.
So the general vanilla SQL that you talk about is going to have to be able to leverage that. And this seems like an interesting pattern to do that.
Yeah, so the general vanilla SQL mm-hmm. has scaled really well, both up and out for years,
mm-hmm.
and we continue investing in ensuring that each and every copy of SQL Server scales really well.
Mm-hmm.
We recently announced that for SQL Server Kilimanjaro, we're increasing the number of cores that are supported per single SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be a limitation at 64. We're going beyond that, and we're always working very closely with hardware partners and vendors to ensure that we're ahead of the curve. For Madison, all that it says that is, as each compute node gets more powerful, the combination of all the nodes in the appliance gets even more powerful. So we continue leveraging technology, we continue leveraging the advances in hardware and software, because, for example, Madison is also, each time that the Windows gets faster, each time that SQL Server gets faster, each compute node in Madison benefits. So it's just a compositional effect.
Awesome.
Someone was asking me, is Madison a V1? And I don't know that it's a V1 in the traditional sense, because it's leveraging V8s, V10s. It has all sorts of mature software inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, there are some components that are an iteration or an earlier iteration relative to the mature product, but a lot of what we're leveraging is the capabilities of Windows and SQL Server.
Excellent. And of course, the mathematics and computer science behind the picture that you've drawn has been around for quite some time.
Absolutely.
So certainly, you know, the math is pretty solid.
Yes.
And, you know, SQL does lots of math.
Yes.
So I think it's really, really interesting because, again, putting the pieces together and, you know, trying to make a connection between what else we've talked about on Channel 9 with Server R2 and the great work of Arun Kishan of removing the dispatcher lock from the kernel, which is something that not even Cutler could do because he didn't have the time. Clearly he's skilled enough to do it, but he never got around to it. I can see really interesting from the engine point of view. I know that the SQL team was really stoked about his work, and I just wanted to bring that out because you mentioned Windows and how you iterate on top, so that's a clear example of where...
Oh, there's lots of areas where you benefit from both Windows and SQL. For example, Madison leverages the Windows failover cluster capabilities for its high availability. Mm. It looks like an appliance, so we take care of a lot of the details. We do the configuration. Once it gets installed, we have configured it. But we're just leveraging same investment from SQL and Windows and clustering. And even on Windows Server 2008 R2, there are improvements on the clustering side, I think. Cluster shared volumes, just another example. Things that we will benefit from, we're not going to leverage in our V1, but definitely we're excited about all the things that are coming up.
Sure. So, I mean, you're the product unit manager, or principal product unit manager is your title, which means you pretty much run the team.
Run test development,
yes.
Program management, and then we have... collection of uniquely talented individuals for the Madison product unit around balancing the hardware and the software, making sure that this works as an appliance, which is sort of a muscle that traditional SQL Server didn't have.
Yeah.
We just go burn the DVD, put it on the web, let all of our customers download and give us feedback.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different world. It's hardware and software. And so we have... an additional set of people with unique talent on how to do the hardware plus software.
Excellent. And so let me ask you, you know, since you ran, again, run the team, what was the, sort of the hardest problem on this project for you? What kept you up at night?
So we're still working on it, so it's still keeping me up on that, so to speak. Madison came up from the acquisition of a company, DataLegro. And one of the most interesting challenges is how to mix the two cultures, engineering cultures, product cultures, collaboration cultures. Because, we are a startup. We are a startup in the middle of California, moving very fast, very agile. So how do you leverage that and still operate within the Microsoft environment? And we're still working on it, and I wouldn't say that it's keeping up at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a fantastic opportunity.
Sure.
Very exciting, very fast-paced. We were talking to some people. We were doing a recruiting brown bag earlier in the week, and we're saying this is the safest way to do a startup, which is you're a startup, but you're within Microsoft, so lots of guarantees. So probably the integration of both cultures, technologies, processes, tools, has been a fascinating experience and continues to be.
I can only imagine. Excellent. Well, you know, I look forward to digging into this in the future. And, you know, sorry, Sabit, about not having your questions, but it's really hot in Seattle and it's hard to think clearly.
Yeah, this
is insane. This is hotter up here right now than it is in California.
It's really true. I've been telling people I need to go back to Southern California to cool down because this is too hot.
It's really interesting. One last question, though. I mean, you sort of, in Southern California, you're not necessarily inside the Death Star, right, which is definitely up here in Redmond, the happy Death Star. And what, I mean, you sort of get to sort of be a satellite. So that must impact, to some degree, your freedom.
Yes. It impacts it in both ways. So, yes, we are this isolated... development center. We have a Microsoft development center in the middle of Orange County. And we were just recently doing a study done by the engineering excellence team on how are things going, how's the remote development. And being isolated came both as a pro and a con. Mm-hmm. Because we're isolated, we can move very fast, we have a very healthy team, we have a fantastic product, fantastic technology we're building. So it's really good. Sometimes we're a little bit too far away from the mothership. There's maybe something interesting going on here, Tech Fest or some conference or
sure.
Windows 7 ship party, something.
Yeah.
Where we just get to read about it,
yeah,
or follow it on Channel 9.
Exactly.
But by no means it's like a major problem, major impediment. We keep coming up every so often. Different members of the team are here. I was surprised I've run into like 3 or 4 members of our team that are here today.
Sure.
So, no, we're working really close together. We have a lot of people from Redmond and from other parts, for example. We're working very closely with the Gray Systems Lab that is located in Madison, Wisconsin. And we are, you can also see them here, see them go to California. So in reality, I think the different location is not a big difference.
Madison, Wisconsin, Madison. Madison, Wisconsin,
yes.
Madison.
And we both report to the same general manager, Quentin. So it's funny that Quentin says, how are the Madisons doing? Because we're both the Madison Project and the Madison, Wisconsin team. And there's some relationship on why it came to be like that. But
yeah.
We work very closely with the Madison, Wisconsin team. Mm-hmm. It's a lab created by David DeWitt, top name in databases.
Yep.
He has some great guys in his team down there, and they're helping us actually with some of the interesting math on the distributed query optimization. Mm. And can't say too much right now, but there's already some interesting ideas for future versions of Madison, where the team in Madison, Wisconsin, is helping the team in Madison in California.
Yeah. Outstanding. Well, you know, first things first, V1, and it still hasn't been released yet.
No.
And obviously, or it would have a very different name.
Correct.
As you mentioned earlier. So just in conclusion, it's clear, I think the question's been answered, wanted more details on Madison. One of the questions I think immediately that would come up from, say, people who are professional IT pro types, who have to manage this kind of stuff, deployment. Is a deployment complex? What's the deployment process if you're going to say, okay, deploy this out to my 150-node cluster?
Yeah. So there's two parts to this, and this is where the appliance model or the appliance-like model differs from the traditional SQL Server model. SQL Server will give you a DVD, and it's up to you to go figure out what is the right hardware, right software to balance it, that you have enough I/O, enough memory, enough CPU, and you go install and configure it. For the appliance model, we're working with several of the hardware vendors, so that you can go and say, I want a 1-rack Madison or a 2-rack Madison, and what you get in your data center is 2 racks of everything is configured. Mm-hmm. So deployment for end users and customers is very easy. It's like almost like buying your microwave oven. You want a microwave oven, then it comes and you plug it in and that's it.
Yeah.
The more interesting question is, okay, how hard is it to configure, for example, for our hardware partners? How is it? Do I need to go and insert another DVD on all 20 nodes if that's the case? And no, the answer is no. We're leveraging, again, lots of fantastic work coming out of Microsoft. WDS, the Windows Deployment Services, we're working with the HPC team, High Performance Computing.
Yes.
They have lots of experience going and imaging a large number of computers, so we're partnering with all of them, leveraging as much technology as we can from within Microsoft to make it really easy for both our hardware vendors and partners, mm-hmm. and ultimately for the end users and customers of Madison.
Excellent. And to be clear, I mean, Madison doesn't require an HPC cluster.
Yes, it does not.
But so, it can run on an HPC cluster.
Well, basically, is that HPC team has developed a set of technologies
sure.
that make it really easy to deploy, to monitor, etc. So we are using that within Madison. But by no means we're using an HPC cluster
sure.
or deploying an HPC cluster or require an HPC cluster. It's for those of you customers that have used HPC, you've seen great technology to go and manage a large number of nodes. Since Madison is a large number of nodes, yeah. we're just using the same thing, consistent experience. So if anyone has been using the HPC pack or the HPC edition of Windows Server, this is going to look very familiar on many fronts. Mm-hmm. So we're just about taking the best out of Microsoft, making a great solution. And by the time you go to a hardware vendor and say, I want a 2-rack Madison, what comes out is pretty familiar and pretty good.
Awesome.
And by the way, we're going to go and integrate with all the other set of products in SQL Server, analysis services, reporting services, integration services, because that all the tools that people are familiar with for using against SQL Server will work against Madison to have a great integration. So it's all about reusing and leveraging the Microsoft platform and ecosystem.
Beautiful. And just to add on to what you said, I mean, that's an incredibly important point, right? There's not a new programming model associated with this, right? So if you think about like Dryad, they had to create Dryad Link. In this case, no, man. The standard queries that you have obviously are going to work because it's going to be taken care of by the controller right. node, which is very similar to what you're already used to using as far as the distributed query optimizer and various other things.
Right. So there's a nuance in there. The language, the SQL language that we support in the control node is a subset of what SQL Server supports. So SQL Server, as we know today, is years and years of getting richer and more powerful. So what we're doing is taking a small subset. Mm-hmm. It's the subset that is very common for data warehousing queries. So
okay.
I'm going to pick on something. The service broker. I'm a huge fan of the service broker, and we can do fantastic application with service broker. I don't think that Madison needs to be able to create queues and do some of those things. So basically, Madison is reduce the set of T-SQL and take only the data warehousing concepts and constructs, and that is what's going to be enabled. So it is SQL. It's not a new language. It's not something different, but it's a subset. Mm-hmm. And over time, we're going to go and get it closer to what T-SQL does.
Absolutely. But again, data warehousing. I get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
Do you have a sense of what Madison is for?
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, I came into this interview without any idea. So I think everybody in the audience absolutely understands it. And it's really, really cool to see SQL and Kilimanjaro wave, if
yes.
you will, to use marketing lingo crap. It's coming, man.
Oh, that's one of the typical questions. Are you in Kilimanjaro? Like, it's a Kilimanjaro wave, which is very close, but not the same.
Totally. I mean, maybe more of like a Kilimanjaro tide.
Right? Hopefully it's just a small wave.
All right. Take care, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I know
Thank
you're
you,
really
and,
busy.
Look forward to doing future updates on
Yeah, I think the next time that we do this, it'll probably have a name, and we get to see some of these appliances or any kind of experience the end-to-end setup and experience, and some of the programming semantics as well in this subset language you're talking about, and showing what doesn't work, what works.
That would
be
good.
Incredibly useful.
And we'll show you maybe some interesting performance numbers and moving large numbers of data.
Beautiful. Hey, thank you for your time.
Thank you.